Found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land, coming to you from the Calls on Call Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. Sometimes I can't talk in a microphone, though. What are you going to do? Today, we are welcoming / preparing to learn from Noelle Starry, author and founder of 20 Lemons and the co-working space. Noelle, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for being on the show here. I'm excited because you are an author, which is super cool, but you also actually started businesses, which means that you're essentially giving business advice and you have experienced owning a business.
Yes.
I see and meet a lot of people that are going to coach people in business and either don't or have never or both. Actually started a business.
Yeah.
So this is cool to actually meet someone that has experience.
Yeah.
Boots on the ground kind of thing.
Yeah. I think a lot about business is getting dirty.
And absolutely.
And, you know, like when I think about like business and thinking about having a little bit of grit, I kind of, you know, I always tell my clients for marketing, I always tell them, hey, I like to like roll my sleeves up and get dirty. And like, you know, I'm not just going to deliver brochures to your space. I want to actually like know, like, who are they going to? Did you tell them what they're going to do with it? What are you going to say to the customers? And I try to like really pull it all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I think you got to get like dirty with your business and get to like know all the bits and pieces so that you can really make it work.
Oh, you have to. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so much going on that I guess the coaches that you hear about or see them pushing their wares kind of thing, I feel like it's almost a snake oil thing. Like they're selling hope based on pushing fear.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. It's not. And people that actually have a business, we can say like, hey man, it's cool. You're going to get a little messy, but that's part of the fun to a point.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how long ago did you start 20 Lemons?
So my marketing company started about 11 years ago.
Oh, wow. Nice.
So I started my first business during the Great Recession.
Sure. Best time to start one, right?
Best time to start one. I was working for a design agency at the time.
Okay.
And I just kind of was of the opinion that, you know, I kind of saw the writing on the wall, like stuff was kind of coming to a halt all over the country. And someone said, you should go and look to work for big business. And I thought to myself, are you watching the news right now? Like, and I just really felt like the piece that I love the most about small business or micro business is you don't need success all over the world. You just need success in your own community. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about micro successes, they don't need massive amounts of audience. And so I felt like I rather just try to like bet on myself. And that's when I decided to start my marketing company.
Nice. So were you working for a graphic design company before or what kind of design
company? Yep. So I was working for a, they did graphics and they did stuff like tons of branding work, tons of website design, apparel.
Oh, wow.
Tons of stuff for, they worked, it was out of, the company was called Tritonic and it was a company up in Newark, New Jersey. So they did a lot of work during the time that Cory Booker was actually mayor up there.
Oh, funny. Okay.
Kind of really interesting times. Yep.
Yeah. Interesting. So you, what was the triggering moment for you deciding to leave there?
So around that time, I remember it kind of being like September, October, you know, Obama was coming into office around that time. And I just like every day the news would come out and it would be like, this market tumbled or these guys are looking for a bailout. And I just kind of really felt like, you know, I heard this really great quote, like someone had talked about and they said, you know, you've got two choices in life. You can either be a part of someone else's plan or someone can be a part of yours.
Sure.
He's like, there's only two options. And I just thought to myself, I'd rather try to like make my own path and get people to support what I was trying to do than just try to hitch on to someone else and hope for the best.
Mm-hmm. At the time, was the business you were working for doing okay?
They were doing okay. They did start to lose business, which I don't think was atypical. I mean, they worked for, they did a lot of work for malls. They did work for nonprofits. They did work for Cory Booker. And all of those places were doing okay. But like I said, even with them as a small business, I knew like in my mind, I already had worked for another small business prior to that. And I just thought to myself, I feel like what it really takes to be good in business is being able to be agile and make changes fast. And as I saw what was happening in the economy, I thought to myself, if I was the guys that owned this business, I would start laying people off. And so at that point, I kind of knew, you know, that was my trigger moment. I think that was my moment was I thought to myself, I can wait here and see if like the axe is going to like cut down on me. I could wait to see what's going to happen. But I'd rather just kind of go on my own.
Sure.
And so that's kind of when I really started trying to make some decisions for what I wanted to do.
Nice. No, that's a very smart move. Instead of waiting and seeing, which is a very common reaction, let's just see how this plays out, right?
Yeah. So
it's very common. It's interesting because that time I started my first business in 2006 and 2008, 2009, when a lot of bigger companies were pulling their marketing, that meant that smaller companies like me could actually afford to have radio ads and TV ads and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of an interesting dynamic, I guess, where before just couldn't, it was out of the cards.
Well, and isn't it funny because like we were just talking 2 seconds ago, like micro businesses aren't as influenced by what's going on in the bigger economy. Right. And so it's just like the determination of who do I want my audience to be? You know, the book that I just put out talks to this point of who's your audience and really what it's talking about is the audience that I might have always had before the pandemic. Nothing has really totally changed, but because of outside environmental influences, maybe my audience has changed today. So like, for example, I have a catering facility that I do marketing work with. And catering facilities, they sell to corporate, right? So corporate comes, they do their annual events, they do their annual meetings, they do team building. Well, the person who might have been making the decision to go there might have been I'm just going to stereotype for a second, might have been like an older white male who now maybe says, wait a second, I might be someone who's at risk of, if I get COVID, I'm going to get really sick, as like maybe an older person who's making the decision, we're not going anymore. And so it has nothing to do with the fact that the decision maker of like a big company might have always wanted to go there. That is the audience. But during, let's say, coronavirus, you might have to say, wait a minute, that's not my buyer anymore. Maybe my buyer is the bride who was going to do an indoor wedding that now is looking for an outdoor wedding. And I have to actually change my audience.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You have to adapt. Certainly.
Yeah.
Where I'm out of near Madison, Wisconsin, they couldn't have a corporate event. It was, I don't know if it was illegal, but it was, they put out stuff that said no mass gatherings of more than 10.
Yeah.
I think it was no mass gatherings of more than 10. I forget how it went. If it was 10 outdoors and 20 indoors or vice versa or something like that. Like, we can't even gather outside. What happens when we're at a stoplight?
Yeah.
Like,
it's really funny.
It's just a weird dynamic, right?
Yeah.
Like where I'm at, we don't get the choice. So Christmas parties and all that kind of stuff, or whatever the annual New Year's bashes and all that kind of stuff that businesses would have, little celebrations. Yay, we survived.
Yeah.
Are probably not getting a whole lot of catering.
Yeah.
So they're having to adapt. Yeah.
And so, you know, I think, you know, over the last several months, you know, so my businesses have always, you know, I politely joke, my businesses literally have been on Main Street. Like Main Street is where I've always had my business. And Jersey, I think, is kind of unique like this. Like every town has like a little Main Street and there's small local mom and pop shops. And we're at this just really interesting time where like all of these small businesses were the ones that always gave to the community, the local softball teams, the local this, you know, we're going into like holiday season. And it's like, this is really the time for the communities to go back and support those local businesses. Like shop local has always been a key message for any town, but it's never meant more than it does today.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, it's weird in practice because I guess there's kind of opposing ideals now with the whole coronavirus, stay home, don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
But you also want to shop local, which a lot of them have had to struggle even like, oh crap, that means that we need a website. We need an e-commerce store. We need a way to get the product to people. And most people already expect free shipping.
Oh yeah.
Stuff like that where it's not practical.
Well,
or they...
actually, yeah. So, you know, one of the things that I've seen that I thought has been kind of ironic, kind of to your point, is biggest day is the year right now, today, right?
Yeah. Cyber Monday.
What do we all do on Cyber Monday? In fact, my dad's been calling me all day. He keeps going, buy me this hair trimmer because it goes up on price tomorrow. You can buy on Amazon, right? And so here it's like, you know, we do Black Friday, everyone's doing all their online shopping. And again, to your point, the people that need the sales the most, I think I was just seeing the other day on the news, they were saying annual online sales this holiday season are supposed to go up like 5%. Like online sales are supposed to be up. But you know, the people that really need that buying are the local people. And even one of the easiest things you can do is just buy gift cards from them and just say, you know what, we're going to buy gift cards from you and do it later. But the challenge was for Black Friday, a lot of the small businesses were saying, wait a minute, not only do we want people to come in, but they want discounts. Yes. So here we're doing all of this extra stuff to try to help and stay alive. And now they want us to like give more discount, you know? And so I think it's really been a challenge like this holiday season with seeing how the small businesses are handling how to actually give pricing on their product.
It's tough. It's tough. And as a consumer, just even yesterday, I went to get some takeout for my wife and kid. And it was a restaurant we'd never went to, you know, just getting some Chinese food or whatever. And you have to figure out what is the system that they have for picking up the food so you're not hanging out in the lobby and stuff like this. So from a bigger business, fast food or something like that, it's just drive through, no big thing. Other restaurants where it's sit down, either have sit down outside or just have closed. For the middle of the road places like that, I'm just like, I don't know how to get food. I don't even know how to be a customer of yours.
Yeah. So I have to tell you, so like before we started before we went on air today, we were talking about my co-working space. My co-working space is called The Co-Working Space.
Awesome name.
And I know you kind of were like, oh, everyone knows what a co-working space is. And the reality is I started my co-working space in 2009. And when I started my co-working space, it was actually called Launchpad Creatives. And Launchpad Creatives was supposed to be so that, you know, other marketers or designers or writers can come and like work out of this space in like a collaborative function. But when people would say, what is Launchpad Creatives? I would say, oh, it's a co-working space. And then they would go, what's a co-working space? And the dialogue just, you know, it was like a 20-minute dialogue to explain what the place was. And the part that I was always blown away by was you mentioned it, like you hit the nail on the head. Like I used to say to people, when I go, being a Jersey girl, I walk into any pizza place in Jersey and you know the routine. You go in, you go to the counter, you order your pizza, you can sit down, they'll bring it over, you can pay at the end. Like it's no big deal. It's the same in every pizza place in New Jersey. The problem is like when you get to a co-working space, or if you're in a new type of work environment, people are confused. Like, right. Where do I go? How do I, like, at what point do I buy? Are you coming to, like, you know, are you dropping it in my trunk? Are you dropping it on my left side? Am I supposed to open the window down? Do I need a QR code? And so during, like, coronavirus, like, what I've been seeing with a lot of, like, my clients is we're trying to put out communication or even video that kind of says, you know, I'm noticing a lot of, like, my restaurants are coming out and they're saying, and it's the owner kind of shooting a video. And he goes, hey, when you come and see us, you're going to notice things look a little bit different. You're going to drive up here. You're going to be met by this person. We're going to do this. You're going to sit down. There's going to be a QR code. Take a picture of it. You can pay right there at the table. And so I think these little video snippets have been so impactful, because at the beginning of coronavirus, I just think the extra influx of emails was like quadruple. Like,
oh, I bet
you couldn't even keep up with what was going on. Mm-hmm. And so some of these little video snippets have been a way of kind of saying, hey, we're recalibrating our environment, or we're recalibrating our culture, and here's what you can expect. And I think, like, to your point, as like the end user, it makes you have a better customer experience when you know what's going to be happening.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because my rule is that confused customers don't buy.
I agree.
So I think that's why pizza delivery is super way up. Because if you want to eat out or you want to get food delivered or whatever, you know, like, they've had that going on for years, so it's no big thing.
Yeah,
it's easy. I don't want to look like an idiot going in to get food.
Yeah,
it's just not. It's like when you go to a hospital to visit someone, and you go to the cafeteria, and it's just this mass array of tables and kind of self-serve, and you don't know, like, I just got to get something for my mom. I don't even know how to do it. Who do I ask?
So funny.
Yeah. It's just it's a weird dynamic. So, or if you make the buying experience easy, make it easy to buy, people will buy, right?
Yeah. So, I always love, there's that book. I think it's The Paradox of Choice. And it talks about, like, when you go to a food store, right? Like a supermarket, and you see all of these different, like, cereal boxes or all these different types of jellies, that if you're overwhelmed by the amount of options you have, mm-hmm. you don't make a choice. You just go, you know what? I'm not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it becomes too challenging. Like, people, like, give me two or three options and I'm good.
Right. You know? Small, medium, large, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect. You know, it's interesting with, so I have calls on call, the call answering service. Uh-huh. And we had packages that were named after different ways, the lines for communication. It's like the first one was a string package, because that was two cans and a string. And then we had copper, fiber, all this kind of stuff. And I thought, hey, we're being clever. Yay. But people had no idea. There was like a string better than tin or fiber, or they didn't. I'm like, you just don't get it, right? It's technology, it's clever. But the idea is, I guess I've learned, they're supposed to be clear over clever. And so now we just have bronze, silver, gold. it's so boring, but people get it. Like, oh, this is where I'm in.
Yeah.
So, all right. Tell me about your book. So you wrote Main Street Moxie.
Yep.
So, and that's super recent.
Super recent.
Super recent, because you talk about COVID in there.
Super recent. I've had my businesses for the last 11 years, and there was always this, like, you know, one of my clients is a publisher. Mm-hmm. And so she and I talk a lot about a book, and I had reiterations of it in my head, right? Like, you know, in business, I call it stirring the pot. You know, you stir the pot and you let the stuff, like, bubble, and then stuff kind of comes down. And originally I wanted to do a book about, like, you know, dressing from the dorm room to the boardroom, like, you know, kind of like a dress for success, like what you do in your early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And as I turned around, right, time flies, and I turned around and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm like farther in business than, like, dorm room age. So I think I need, like, a different audience. And really, like, what started to come out of it was this idea that you fail forward a lot in business. Like, you know, I know like there's always like the joke that where it's like, oh, does, you know, does success go like this, like in a straight line? And then it's like, no, success.
Yeah, right.
The scribbles. Like, all over. And so I think it's this idea of when you get your hands dirty in business, you know, if you're always waiting for perfection, you're not going to get there. Like you're stuck. And so you're always like, I got 80% of the information. I'm going to make the next step based on what I know. And you kind of just keep doing this on repeat. And the more you do it, I think you start to build this intuition to how you handle your decision-making in business. And so the book is really about a series of ways to make decisions as you're trying to like get forward and go through things. And, you know, I had a lot of the book done as we were going into COVID, and my publisher and I basically said, this has got to go out now. And the reason for it is, you know, I've been on a few calls with some like entrepreneurship classes. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that I say to the entrepreneurship classes is I say, congratulations for being in an entrepreneurship class during coronavirus, because you are learning right now what it's like to deal with a disaster on a daily basis. Like, because I don't think business is always easy.
No.
Like, I think, like, I see your face. It is not, it's not only not easy, it's hard. It's hard. And you need to be able to like make decisions on the fly with the information that you know. And so being able to be able to make decisions in agile environments is really important. And so I felt like as we were going through this, I felt like the story is not just, hey, it's a success story that I've like made it out of COVID alive. It's kind of saying, I am right there with you. Like, you are not alone. Like, all of us small business owners are kind of on the same path. But you know what? We're the backbone of the people that always been able to push through. And you just, you know, part of it is grit and part of it is gusto. I could not believe during our first shutdown, every time I got on the phone with one of my restaurant owners, to your point before, they were coming up with new clever ideas on how to like pitch something or present something or how to like send stuff to a table. And I would be talking to business owners all over the country. And I have these moments when I talk to business owners from Texas to California to Maine, and the stories are exactly the same. And I think to myself, it's not that someone is being so much more innovative, but it makes you feel like you have some camaraderie with like people that are going through the same process or the same like steps that you are. And so I feel like the book is kind of to unite some business owners to kind of say, hey, we're going through this and you can do it. And you know what, like, wake up, like, you know, I joke, like, put on like your favorite underwear, because that's like your superhero costume, like before you get out there and go out into the world every day. And don't be afraid to make mistakes, because you fall once, you get up twice. Like, you just keep moving ahead. And like, before we know it, we're going to be through this also.
Right. Yeah. I feel like every 10 years or so, we run into a little hiccup.
Yeah.
Correction, or whatever you want to call it, winter, whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was interesting when you were talking in your book about what to wear, especially with the Zoom meetings.
Yeah.
People have kind of started dressing down.
Yeah.
Some of them way down.
Like, yeah.
You going to paint a hallway, or where are you headed?
Yeah. So, well, yeah. I mean, it's kind of funny, because even when we got to like the dressing section, you know, like at that point, you know, like we have some family friends that are involved in the fashion industry, and people that sell like button down shirts are being laid off. And then I've got clients that are selling like lingerie e-commerce, and sales are through the roof. Like, you know,
oh, interesting.
Everything is all over the place. And,
Those are different Zoom meetings.
But what I really think, you know, it was like really a challenge to say, do you keep some nicer clothes still in your wardrobe, or do we just kind of start going the other direction? And I think like there's still something to be said about being able to like dress up, show up. And it doesn't mean that you need to be in a full suit, but it definitely means how do you want to present yourself and what image do you want to push across? I mean, the images that we're pushing across today are flat, right?
Right.
You know, like we're not really getting the opportunity to like sit across from someone and shake hands, you know, like, right. Like the art of shaking hands is gone. Like I remember being in business school and the diagram comes up on the background and it goes, you know, you're going to interlock thumb to thumb.
Aim for the thumb.
Hands. And I remember that, like, that's going to be a totally different lesson, you know, to the students of business school.
Yeah. There. You know, it's interesting you say that because my kid's remote with his school now, of course. Yeah. And I was looking at the week, what they're being taught this week. And one of the main things was how to communicate and introduce yourself to people without touching them. So no hug, no high five, no handshake, just the different ways to do this. And oh my gosh, I just felt like, what are we teaching people?
Yeah.
Because I'm a guy that shake hands, high five.
Yeah.
Some people hugs, but mostly high fives and shaking hands.
Yeah.
I'm like, we're teaching them how not to do that? Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Because to me, I'm like, we can't be afraid of this forever. Like this can't go on forever. Can't possibly. But I've been wrong about a lot of stuff. So maybe I'll be wrong about that. I hope not.
I hope not.
Maybe like, oh, if I can't get another high five before I'm dead, I feel like we got a problem.
Well, you know, I have to tell, I mean, even back to your concept of like faux pas, right? Like, I mean, I have spent the majority of my business life doing face-to-face meetings and going out and having dinners with people and getting to know them and doing activities. And, you know, New Jersey had done a lockdown and, we finally started to be able to go out and we went to a picnic with a few other families and kind of to your point, cause it's so second nature. Like I saw someone and they introduced themselves and I immediately like shut my hand out and grabbed their hand to like shake it. And as I'm shaking it, I'm thinking to myself, I don't think I'm supposed to be doing this right now. Like, oh, you know, like it's almost like the other direction where you're like, oh my gosh, I forgot that I probably shouldn't even be doing this. You know?
That's so weird. So weird. Yeah. I don't. Oof.
You know, so my background, I went to University of Maryland, College Park.
Okay.
And I got my degree from Robert H. Smith School of Business and I got it in human resources. And what I really loved was I always loved this idea of how people grow and interact. And they always talk about the hardest thing to change in any business is culture.
Oh, yeah.
And so
most important thing too.
The most important thing, which is the hardest thing to change. And so, you know, isn't it ironic that like the entire world is being asked to change their cultural norms,
right,
as a way to succeed when we already know that this is actually the hardest thing to do?
Yeah, from my point of view, you're essentially asking an extremely social species to not be social or to be social on a digital front, which is way different. I'm like, this is the difference between watching porn and having sex.
Yes.
Not the same.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of funny. So, I mean, back to like the book, you know, when I talk about this section about what do we dress like today, right? Or how do we dress for success? Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of like do a joke in the beginning and I say, you know, whenever I watch movies like Waterworld, right? All these futuristic movies and everyone looks, everyone looks like they're a disaster. What happened? And mm-hmm. then we get through Corona and you think to yourself, after you've looked at yourself in the mirror, I know what happened. We all got like locked down and couldn't do anything. I think it's like one of these things where I also am like blown away by like our point in history that we're in. I think we're in a really huge inflection point where people are going to drastically change the way technology works. And so, yes, I agree with you. I think flat Zoom doesn't work. Like, this does not work from a social standpoint. It doesn't work for business development. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work. And I think that there's going to be new technologies that are going to be coming out that are going to try to create more social dynamics.
Three-dimensional, or?
Like, you know what? I think about Star Wars, where like Princess Leia shows up in a hologram. Like, I don't know exactly what it looks like yet, but I'm pretty sure the future of communication digitally is not going to be flat.
All right. I hope not.
I don't know.
I would like to go back to in person, but.
I like to go back to in person.
That said, we're able to do this and you're halfway across the country. So. Mm-hmm. I guess there's benefits as far as that goes.
Yeah.
And I guess it made some changes or forced some changes in my business that turned out to be positive that I would have never expected to be positive. So there's a little bit of silver. What's that?
Like, what type of changes have you seen?
Oh, my people not being in the office anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. They went away. So I created a studio, a podcast recording studio, not this one, but over there, for people that are still willing to come in person or that can/will. And because I don't know what else to do with the space, I'm paying for it and I have a lease. So I figured I better use it for something.
I got it. So you put some on one side, some on your side, and then you're like, we're going to roll with it.
Yeah. You just got to adapt. Where all the employees are working out of their house now.
Yep.
House is now.
Yep.
And I would have never guessed that they would be as productive as they are, but thank goodness, man, they have been arguably more so. I don't know if that would have been the case with a lot of other employees that I had. I think it's safe to say that would not be the case with other employees that I had, but this crew tip top, super awesome.
That's awesome.
So I don't see us coming back. Even if they're like, wait, you know, like the media or whatever you want to say, whoever comes out and says this, like, we were just kidding, it's not really that big of a deal, go back to the way you were, I'd probably think, we're cool working from home. It's okay.
So I have a silly question then. So, like, what would you continue to do with your space?
Nothing. I think I'll let the lease lapse and I'll build an office in my house. Or end up at a co-working space or something like that. Some escape.
I just saw an article that said co-working spaces are expecting 5x growth.
I could see. Yeah. If you can survive this year, two, whatever. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I guess I like the idea of a co-working space, and the co-working spaces that I've seen, they have different options as far as privacy or walls or open or whatever you want, or going back to your desk or just using a flat surface. Whatever, there are tons of options.
Yeah.
And if it's not needed 8 hours a day every day, then it is a practical alternative.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely think that's my opinion. I think stuff is going to head towards that.
Yeah. And I guess going back to the whole culture thing, without employees in my office, I don't have anyone to talk to. And I like to have those conversations. I think even like Apple had that whole centering thing where they wanted to have people accidentally bump into each other to trigger conversations, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't accidentally run into someone when you're remote.
Yeah.
So you need some means of communicating with people that is not scheduled.
Yeah.
It's just serendipity takes over or something like that. And right now I think we're removing a lot of that opportunity.
Yeah. That's interesting. I could see that.
Yeah, they have, what was I can't remember if it was Apple or Google, where they have this huge area in the middle where I don't know if they had the food and stuff like that in the middle. So people had to leave their office and go through this huge area where they're bound to see other people. So, and maybe accidentally talk to someone and maybe accidentally invent whatever.
I agree with you. So, I mean, I do a lot of work in the hospitality industry, and I actually think it was, because of that background in hospitality that I feel so passionate about co-working.
Oh yeah.
And what it was I had worked for Jersey Diners, and Jersey Diners, or if you like ever look at like the history of diners, it's like, that's where people used to go and have business. You go, you get a cup of coffee, someone else is having a cup of coffee, and it's over a cup of coffee that like relationships were made. And so when I started thinking about work environments, I felt like that was such a critical piece. And I've even seen recently people talking about how when you create outside public space, like parks and stuff, like they're kind of also designed so that people interact. And so from a structural standpoint, I don't totally know what we're going to see in the future. And I think I don't know if people really have clear ideas around that. Like, you know, even like for like thought leaders in those areas, I know they're thinking about it, but I don't know if people have come up with anything clever yet.
I think that's, yeah, I think you're correct there.
Yeah.
We don't know. It's just mass confusion right now. I think we're all just kind of doing what we think is the best that we can and just adapting as we're moving on. But that's just the name of the game in business, right? I think I even wrote a blog about that, where it wouldn't matter if COVID happened or not, you would have some other problems that you'd have to solve as a business owner.
Yeah.
Just they happen, especially if you have employees.
Yep. Yeah. They're
totally just problems. They just come. You will never be without problems.
Yeah.
If you're without them, you'll create some just so you can have something.
Well, that's like so funny, right? Like everyone's like, man, and I thought I had problems the day before COVID, you know, like COVID hit, and then you're like, wait, I got like other problems. And you're right. Like even when there aren't legitimate problems, something's a problem, right?
Absolutely.
So, you know, but I do think like we're getting a little bit of this like time under tension, stress opportunity where-
Yeah.
You are, I know a lot of business owners I've talked to are exhausted. Like, you know, they're 8 months into this and they're like, I'm emotionally burnt. And one of the things I've been talking about as we've been going into the holidays is take a week off, like shut your business and take a week off, because we're not really taking long weekends away the way that we used to, or we're not taking a week vacation, because where are you going on your week vacation? Like
right?
Staycation? We're already staycationing, right?
Right.
So, you know, I don't think people are giving themselves a chance to recharge. You know, I feel like whenever you read fitness books or like goal setting books, they really say you can really only do like a hard push like 90 days at a time, you know, like. And if we're 8 months into this, like take off between Christmas and New Year's, you know, like give yourself a legitimate break, because, you know, I think we got another like push ahead of us. And I think it's in those rest periods that all of this extra stress or decision-making, when we just pause a minute, like our brains could just think enough or clear out enough that like, I think we can get creative again, you know? And so I think that's kind of like the next piece as like a culture we really need to be pushing on.
Yeah, that's a very good point. You can definitely tell that people are getting fatigued and they're just, I don't know, I guess ever since March, I feel like there's just been this cloud of frustration or tension. Or just maybe it's people throwing up their arms thinking, I don't know what's going to happen, whether they're concerned about their job or their business, or, I mean, what other market is going to crash or something like that. There's just so much going on and inundating people that it's tough to even adapt, let alone perceive what's going on.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Like you're not even like getting through to something where it's like, hey, I implemented this thing and I followed it through 100%. Cause like, as soon as you're implementing it, it's changing 24 hours later. You know, we do a lot of work in hospitality, and every time we were putting something up on a website, you know, Governor Murphy was changing the rules and we were changing the communication again.
But yeah, you guys had a mess.
God, stop. Yeah. And so, you know, I think partially what I'm also seeing in the environment is like everyone just kind of saying, I don't want to get, it goes back to what we were talking about before. Like, we don't want to be doing 100 different things or selling 100 different products. We're only going to sell 5 products now or 10 mm-hmm. products. You know, I'm seeing a lot of streamlining, a lot of like, where can we cut things? How can we make our processes easier? We don't want people calling and talking to customer service and getting rerouted. We want people to be able to like go to the app, order online, and be done, right? Mm-hmm. Like everyone's trying to figure out, how do I streamline my process? And so I think this is what business owners are getting really clear about. So even if they're like, cause they got to be able to adjust where they're saying, hey, whether we're getting full shutdowns or we're getting fully open, I need to be able to like adjust quickly. And so I can't do that if I'm not agile enough. And so I think they're doing a lot of streamlining.
I think that's fair. That's fair. I think there's a challenge because there's an expense to that, right? When their sales are down or they don't even know if their industry is going to survive, their industry, let alone their business.
Yep.
And they're either having to lay down some money to come up with a website or an app or something like that, that can solve whatever problem it is to keep their customers. I mean, that's a challenging place to be.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, because you do a lot of marketing with restaurants, where do you see the restaurant industry going in, let's say, 3 years?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, ironically, the Restaurant Association just put out a, where's the restaurant industry going in the future? And I think the webinar
was
2 days, and I did not take that webinar yet. but I think what we're going to end up seeing is a lot more self-service type stuff. I think we're going to end up seeing subscription stuff. I think one of the most clever things that I've seen come out as we were going in COVID, not because of COVID, was, you know, I don't, like Panera is offering like coffee subscription programs. So, So for $9.99, you can go to Panera every day and get a free cup of coffee. Because they're using it as a loss leader, right? Like, I'm not just going to get a cup of coffee 30 days in a row and never get anything else, right? So they're banking on the fact that, you know, like we talk about restaurants, the ways that you increase your dollars is you either, you know, hey, a table that's getting entrees, you're going to have them get more. They're going to get appetizers or desserts. Or you're going to say to them, hey, you come in once a month. Now we want you to come in twice a month. So if you increase like someone's repeat business, just minimally, you increase your margin. And so programs like the coffee subscription program are fantastic because they're going to increase frequency at minimal dollars. You know, they're using it a little bit as like a loss leader in the beginning. But it starts to create a sense of like loyalty, right? And so I think loyalty programs where they used to be, hey, come and spend so much dollars and we'll give you discounts. I think they're going to come up with new ways to create loyalty programs and allow for people to do a lot more self-serve. So that's kind of what I see kind of coming down the pipeline.
Interesting. What about the more sit-down or more formal restaurants?
I think back to like, you know, when we were talking about like small restaurants, I think if you're small enough, I think like you'll be okay. I think the places that have bigger buildings, bigger overhead are going to be more challenged. I think that, you know, I've seen some of my restaurants, they're trying to take their products and sell wholesale. I've seen some of my clients starting to set up. One of the more clever ones that I've seen lately is, in fact, it's not even one, like 3 or 4 of my clients are doing it, but I like this one particular one. We have a client called Oink and Moo Barbecue.
Oh, nice.
And Oink and Moo Barbecue sells barbecue, but they're actually now also selling as a market. So when you come to their store, you can actually buy smokers from them. You can finance your smokers from them. You can buy your wood chips. You can buy like
tomahawk
steaks. So they really are trying to just say, hey, you're not just going to come and get a $5 barbecue. You're going to come and get a $1,000 smoker.
Sure. Okay.
Right. So they're kind of doing a little bit of that type of stuff. So I've seen some of our clients sell market. We do some work with like some Greek restaurants and they started doing like import markets. So they've taken out some of their inside seats and they've started saying, you know, come in and pick up your olive oil and pick up your breads and pick up like your Nescafe and all these different items. So I think the market idea is kind of clever because, you know, when we go back to small business, you know, like you also think a little bit more specialty, right? And so you're going to get, I think, some more of these like specialty items that are coming through. Even some of like more high-end places, you know, there's a great place in New Jersey, Grounds for Sculpture, that's outside Sculpture Garden. And they have a beautiful French restaurant called Rats on the grounds. And Rats is putting together picnic baskets. Oh, so you can get these gourmet picnic baskets and have a picnic on the grounds, you know? So this is where I'm saying, I think people are being able to be clever, but it doesn't create the same turns, right? Like part of how restaurants make money is, am I turning my tables? Am I turning them for higher dollar values? I think it's going to cut some of the margin, but I think it will bridge between where we are and probably where we're going. And I think you're going to see more collaboration. So like when I see the smokers being sold at like the barbecue place, maybe the smokers are going to be paying for some of the marketing dollars. Maybe there's co-op dollars. You know, so I think there's going to be more collaboration that's occurring. So that I do think that's going to happen. I'm just starting to see it though.
Gotcha. It's interesting. It's a challenging world. I really liked your book because it talks essentially about how, I don't want to say that they were necessarily like, this is what you got to do answers kind of thing. But it was an awareness. This is what you have to look for. These are some options, and it gives you a lot of choices to at least put your brain to think about, okay, we know that we can get through this. We just have to figure out how. Mm-hmm. That's all there is to it. Mm-hmm. And then actually implement that once you figure out how.
Yeah. So I mean, like, you know, like there's a great book out there. Maria Forleo, I think that's who writes it. Everything's figure outable, you know?
Oh, and fine. That's another Jersey girl.
Yeah. And all of her stuff is all about, you know, it's stories about how people figure things out. And I think when I sit down and I say, hey, we're going to work on a marketing plan, we play the game of like, where are you today? Where do you want to go? Here's your gap. How do we close it? Right. Mm-hmm. And I think the big piece that I'm trying to say in the book also is, for right now, we don't got to worry about what's happening in 10 years. Let's worry about the next 60 days, the next 90 days, the next, like, you know, like, let's just kind of get through bits and pieces one step at a time. Because I think as fast as we make changes, the external environment changes and we have to change again, right? Mm-hmm. Like, trying to say, hey, this is the new model of how co-working is going to look for the next 10 years is crazy. Like, we don't,
10 years,
we don't know that much, right? Like, we just know, how do we get communities reacquainted today? Mm-hmm. Like, that's the only thing we can figure out. And then, you know, I'm a really big fan of, if you listen to the market will tell you exactly how to sell them.
Oh, interesting.
And okay. So in order to do that, you got to roll your sleeves up and you got to ask a lot of questions. What do you like about this? How's this experience going? How can we change it? And so I think as you continue to ask questions, you're going to continue to get answers to know how to shift things.
That makes sense. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. What has been your biggest, we'll call it nugget that you've learned since you started your business in 2008?
My biggest nugget? That's a good question. I think my biggest nugget has been, I think it really falls back to the concept of fail forward.
Okay.
You know, I think you just need to accept that in order to move ahead, you're not going to know every answer, and you need to kind of be okay with that.
Fair. And totally fair.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever been a perfectionist, but I think I realized to get ahead, you got to keep going forward.
Okay.
You got to stay in motion.
That makes sense. Yes.
And I think a lot of times, like where I see people stalled out, it just seems like they stop making decisions or they get paralyzed a little. And I think even if you make the wrong decision, you've got to keep some of your inertia moving.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The rule is, in my world, the rule is keep it moving.
Mm-hmm.
Just go, go, go. You either grow or you die.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's an interesting, I like that. In the Midwest here, there's a lot of people that are terrible at making decisions. Just slow moving train. Extremely slow moving train. They just want to get as much data as possible, even if it takes them 10 years to decide what to order for breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, oh my gosh, you gotta go.
Gotta go.
Yeah.
Gotta go. So I think like to that point, I feel like you gotta surround yourself by people that go.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, your tribe. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. You really need a good tribe.
I love doing business with people on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Because you guys get stuff done.
We just go.
Oh my gosh, I love it. I love it. I'm like, I gotta move by you people. You're so phenomenal.
You just need to like virtually chat with all of us.
Maybe that's the name. It's you know, like maybe they'll right have coffee here. Shops with cameras and TVs while we interact accidentally with people. Oh, wait.
So funny.
Yeah, what who knows?
Concept.
But it's interesting. Cool. Well, thanks for being on the show. This has been super cool.
Yeah.
Before we go, do you have a favorite business book or favorite book of any kind that you'd like to tell me about?
Favorite book.
I just like to ask authors that because that means chances are if you wrote a book, you read books.
I do read. I read tons of books. I actually just finished a book. I'm going to peek this, make sure I get it right because I actually thought it was good. The last book that I just finished was The Compound Effect by Darren Hardley.
I read that book. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was the last one that I read. And I definitely, you know, I noticed no matter what business book I read, there's hundreds of things in all of them.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to take 100 things from all of them. You just need to take one, right?
Yeah, it's totally worth it.
And you to your point before, you get a nugget and a nugget and a nugget. And next thing you know, you turn around and you've got some pretty good foundation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. Where can people find Main Street Moxie?
Amazon. Right. Yep. So Amazon, Main Street Moxie. Surviving and thriving in the new American marketplace.
The new American marketplace.
Because it is not the old American marketplace. All new.
Funny. That's awesome. This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumph and successes of business owners across the land. Oh my goodness gracious. We covered a lot of ground, Noelle.
We did.
I'm excited to see what happens in the next... well, forever really, but let's call it in the next 2 years. I feel like it's going to take another year for us to figure out what is going on. And then after that, I feel like we'll have a track or a rut. I'm not sure which one it'll be, but hopefully it's a track.
I hear you.
So that's just fun. And you're in the marketing world, so it'll be fun to see what you do with all that.
Yes.
Cool. My name is James Kademan, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and receptionist services for service businesses across the country on the web at callsoncall.com, as well as Draw In Customers Business Coaching, offering coaching services for entrepreneurs looking for growth, hopefully that's all of them, on the web at drawincustomers.com. And of course, The Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur in all of us, available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our guest, Noelle Starry, author of Main Street Moxie, From Surviving to Thriving in the New American Marketplace, as well as the founder of 20 Lemons and The Co-Working Space. I love that you have so much going on. That's so cool.
Thank you.
Find us airing locally on 103.5 Wednesdays at 1 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., and let's see here. Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link found at drawincustomers.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, enjoy your business.